What's up, dude? How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. You know, living life. Seems like you're running around all crazy, just, you know, one appointment to the next.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit of that. I just coming upstairs to do a podcast here. I've done a couple podcasts outside, which is super pleasant. But there's always like a car that drives by, and I got an editor, and he's great, and all that stuff. But it's always like the wind is like blowing in the mic, so I just come up here for a little quiet time. You're in the basement, yeah?
Yeah, man. Always in the basement. Yeah, it's the quietest place in the house.
Still standing up with the laptop on like that dresser.
Yeah, man. Like, look, there we go. There's my mic over there. Yeah. Got me hanging out here. Yeah, man. Yeah. This is the way to do it. Like, I feel like just by standing, I'm more mentally engaged than I would be if I was sitting.
Yeah, no, that's good. I believe that definitely. I have a stand. I'm at a standing desk. I was all hyped when I was in the like purchasing process for the standing desk, and like I have never, not a single time, stood at this desk, not once. maybe you know what? Hold on. Let's see. Let's stand. Hold on.
Yeah, man. Let's have a standing party.
Do I have? Is everything set up? Am I gonna fuck this up? Is something gonna fucking snap off my desk? Hold on. Yep. There it goes. There it goes. One sec. Let me get that. Oh shit. How do I look? We good? This is a good spot. Do I feel?
Yeah, you're great. You got the top of your hair just right at the top of the picture. It's perfect.
Look at that setup. All right, cool. And we're standing, and we're live from being vertical. Dude, talk me through. I've never prepared less for a podcast ever, and I realized I just wanted to hear what you're up to. I feel like I'm watching your training has changed a little bit. I want to check in with biking stuff. What are you up to?
Yeah, 6 weeks ago, I changed my training from what the 2 times a week full body thing, which was working great.
Talk me through what that change was to the 2 day full body, and then we'll go to what you're doing now.
Yeah, so 2 day full body, I was basically just doing 2 or 3 top sets of 4 or 5 different movements for the day. So there'd be a push, a pull, a hip or leg movement. I would do one of the days would be like a hinge of some sort, and the other day would be a squat of some sort. And then I would throw in like 1 or 2 auxiliary exercises at the end, which would be either lateral delts or arms of some sort. And usually if the pressing movement is a horizontal press, then I would throw in some lateral work. If the press was an overhead press, then I would probably throw in some arm work, and I would probably have like a push-up be one of those things so that I get a little bit of chest volume there too. But that was great. Sessions were taking around 60 minutes twice a week. Progress was solid. I was fitting in good biking and all of that, or good cardio. I guess at that time I was running more, and just kind of felt like I was going to try something different. Like, I'm always trying to experiment and try new stuff, as you are. And in prior years, have discussed how I used split routines ineffectively with my cardio season, where it would just become way too much. And so I was trying to figure out this year if I could put together a split routine that seemed to be effective for the strength training side of things, but also allow me to open up some additional opportunities on the cardio side. And so when I constructed this 3 times a week program, it's 1 day is like a full robust leg day. Like, it has a hamstring movement and a quad movement, and then usually some calves or some abs if I have the energy for it. And then the second training day, which would be 2 days later, would be more chest and back focused. But I guess it would be all chest and back focused. I'd have a vertical pull, horizontal pull, and then 2 different chest movements for various regions. And then the third day, I think, is the most important in making this work, because it's officially like a shoulder and arm day, but I really wanted to make sure that I was also hitting the chest and back so that I'd get 2 weekly sessions of chest and back volume in. So that shoulder and arm day always has either like a dip or a push-up, and it also has a pull-up of some sort, so that I'm getting some of that auxiliary work for the back and the chest in there, as well as training the arms. Doing some cool stuff with it too, experimenting with some supersets. Like, I know science is kind of a little blah on pre-exhaust supersets, but I happen to have always been a huge fan of pre-exhaust supersets. I've used them literally through my entire training career. And so in one of these shoulder arm days, I have cable curls supersetted directly into supinated pull-ups. And then I have cross cable push-downs supersetted directly into dips. And I just find those so effective to get more bang for your buck for your time. And aside from these workouts now only being 45 minutes a piece, which is also nice compared to the hour or so that I was spending before, but it also allows me to kind of strategically put my cardio work around the days a little bit more effectively, where, around the leg day, I'd primarily have like a walking day or a zone two day or something like that. And then around the upper body days, I'm more apt to do some higher intensity or longer duration cardio stuff. So that's been really nice. And I also just like the structure of doing something every day, like not doubling up and having a double day, but every day there's something that I'm doing that's going to be more than just walking usually. And so those three lifting days then allow me four cardio days. And it's just been like a really nice balance between things. And I feel recovered and all's been good.
Yeah, I loathe 2-a-days. Like I loathe it with a passion. I will do any, but I'm at a point where like, if I want to get better at either running, I mean, I can still get better at running 3 days a week without a doubt. I'm already doing more than what would be needed to get better, and there's even room for me to do more within a single session for now. I still have like a per session volume potential increase that I could do before needing to add an additional session, but I'm really like anti 2 days, two a days, just avoiding it like the plague. Just not something I don't know. I just, there's other stuff I want to do with my time. Let's not overcomplicate it. Like, it's just like other stuff I'd rather do with my time, and having a it be one thing feels like I can focus on that one thing. You know, it's even if it was like a similar, if I cut the sessions down in time and I tried to make them equated for time, just like splits my cognitive focus across two different things. Not really my, if I'm lifting, I'm like in a certain headspace for that. If I'm, you know, if I'm running, I'm in a certain headspace for that. And for now, that just feels right. I think in, you know, I'm not saying I'm in marathon prep, but I signed up for the Philly Marathon in November. And so I think, like, you know what's so funny? I've been talking a lot about with Alex. It's like when people pick a race that is a longer distance, they assume that they need to train more, right? It's like, oh, you train for 5K, you're like, oh, I don't need to do that much training. We train for marathon, you have to do all this training. But like that idea of like, I need to train more because I'm doing an event that's longer distance, it's not super logical. You know, like I could run a marathon right now, right? You could run a marathon right now. So what is, why are people like, oh, I'm signing up for this longer distance event and now I need to train more, I need to run more? That's not super logical. So I don't need to train more for this marathon. I could run a marathon right now if I just pick the appropriate pace that I can sustain based on what I know. But there is, I can't shake that I just feel motivated for this thing that is kind of arbitrarily held up in our society of like doing a marathon where I'm like feeling that urge to do a bit more, even though like the only reason to do more for anyone is to perform better at that task. A 5K runner is still, you know, professional 5K runners are still running like 80 miles a week, you know, and pro marathon runners, maybe they're 100 miles a week. And so it's not that different. It's not like the people who are running five times, you know, eight times the distance are doing a whole lot more running. But I'm still feeling a little bit of that urge to do a bit more. Coming back to why I started this monologue was, yeah, but I'm avoiding 2-a-days like the plague right now. So still adding, I'm upping those runs from 45 minutes each to an hour each, just to get some extra volume without needing to go to an additional workout.
Yeah, I mean, I saw you the other day. You ran like an hour and a half or something straight at a sub 10-minute pace, which is really sweet.
Yeah, that's been good. That's been good. I want to come back to your workouts. You've been doing a couple, so you have a leg day. What's that second day?
The leg day is first with abs and calves. If I am motivated to do them, I've done them every time thus far, so I feel good about that. The second day is torso, so like chest and back for the most part. And then the third day is shoulders and arms.
Do you feel any, not that you should, a devil's advocate be like, oh, you're not hitting a certain muscle group 2 times per week. Are you like, yeah, that's true. It's going to be all right.
Well, that's why I have the upper body for sure getting hit twice a week with the shoulder and arm day having the torso stuff on it. And then the arms and shoulders are getting hit on the chest and back day auxiliary. But as far as legs go, that's actually purposeful to only have one leg day on there because of all the biking that I'm doing. Like I know it's concentric only, but the amount that I do, like there is leg fatigue and I feel sometimes even feel sore in my legs from biking if I'm doing hills or something like that. So, yeah, I think the one leg day a week is purposeful. And And honestly, when I've monitored my performance on lower body work over the last 2 years or so, my best performance increases have come when I'm only training my legs once a week. I've really been surprised by that because I would have thought that, based on the evidence that more frequency would produce better results, strength is a skill, all of these things. But for whatever reason, every time I cut my leg volume back or take, more time away between sessions than I think would be ideal, I always end up feeling better and performing better. So maybe that's just something that's unique to me. You've heard Eric Helms talk about how he can train his legs lower volume, but needs higher volumes for his upper body. Like, I'm sure there's a number of individual differences that could play into that.
Do you think you're running it long enough to completely get rid of the neurological component? Like, is this experiment of one time per week training? Because I bet you perform better for the first X amount of weeks, where it's like, hey, I'm just showing up under less fatigue each time, and holy crap, it's feeling great, and I'm adapting.
Right.
Do you feel like you're running that experiment long enough to come to that conclusion? I know you as a person, so I'm anticipating it. Most likely yes, but I think that'd be a critique of like, well, I bet you are performing better for now.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is more dramatic increases in the first few weeks, as you alluded to, given that recovery is just amplified. But I have been more or less training my legs once a week. So even when I was doing the 2 times a week full body program, I did hamstrings once a week and quads once a week. So even though I was training legs twice a week, it was still once a week per muscle group. And so, yeah, I've been more or less running this now for 1.5 years or so, with this frequency for lower body. And prior to that, I was kind of getting stuck. I was training my legs every 4 to 5 days, and I was just feeling as if, the soreness wouldn't go away until day three. So I'd have one day of no soreness, and then I'd go again. And it just never felt quite like psychologically, it wasn't there. The warm-up sets would feel heavy, and then I just wouldn't perform as well as I wanted to. So yeah, maybe, I mean, it could also be, an effect of volume. So given that I'm only training them once a week, I'm doing a little bit more volume, and that could play into it. Whereas if I was doing them twice a week, I'd probably do less volume. It's tough to say.
Alec Blennis, obviously. He has brought up this idea that, like, this is not the exact point I'm going to make, but I think his point is an interesting one, where it's like we try and optimize so many variables. At some point, like a small tangent for the listener, that we try and optimize. It's like all this discussion of optimizing so many variables, that at some point you've optimized enough variables that you've maxed out the what's physiologically capable, what your body's capable of in terms of rate of muscle growth. And so it's like, at what point have you done the perfect amount of volume with the perfect frequency, with the perfect proximity to failure, with the perfect exercise selection, with the perfect protein, to the point where, like, you can't build any more muscle, dude. Like, you don't also need to optimize this and this and this and this and this. You've already built the maximum amount of muscle that you could build. I feel like I'm in a point where no matter how much I try and optimize certain things, I'm stuck, not stuck. I'm in a place where, like, I just would have to do more. Like, I even finding little places to be more efficient and more effective, it comes down to, like, yeah, but at this number of minutes, it's not enough. So you're trying to optimize all these things, but there's a variable you're not optimizing that would actually make a huge difference. Right now, I'm in a somewhat a polar position to you, where I'm in a experimenting with going to extreme lengths in terms of frequency. You know what? I would call them extreme lengths. The frequency crowd would call them, like, more moderate lengths. I've been running, let's say, a full body ABC. So trying to hit every single muscle group 3 times a week. And with my time constraints, that means one working set of everything. It means just one working set, nine exercises per workout, let's say. And if you're training at home, we have a similar home gym. You have, what do you have that I don't? The T-bar row and the press machine. But an ABC split, so 3 different full body days where I'm trying to hit every single muscle group, 3 different workouts, means that, like, there's so many different exercises that if you're in a full gym with, like, amazing equipment, right now I have 6 different chest exercises and 6 different back exercises, 3 different delt exercises. I'm punting biceps and triceps, not training them at all. Three quad, three ham, three glute, three calf, kind of. And I just today, this morning, had it hit. I've been enjoying it, but I just realized that even with the equipment that I have and the knowledge that I have and trying to perfectly figure this out, I just don't have, I'll come back to that point, but I know you know this. There are certain exercises that biomechanically make sense, that setup-wise makes sense, execution, everything's clicking, but at some point you get really, like, how much weight you're lifting, the exercise doesn't scale in comfort with more mm-hmm. load. And so I'm, like, running into things where it's like, yeah, I'm 16 weeks into doing dips, and I'm just, like, not feeling good anymore about the doing dips plus, you know, 100 yeah. pounds. And so, like, some of the exercises are running their course. I've been at this for 12 weeks now. We're like, dips is kind of like, you know, standing costal pec press. It's kind of like I've strapped 90 pounds to the belt and I'm just starting to be fatigued. I know that, like, people are going to chuckle that it's, like, fatiguing for me to set that up. But when you're doing one working set, I'm setting up 9 different things. So if, like, 4 of them have now become kind of an annoying setup, that's like, it adds up for me. So I don't, at home training, I just don't have 6 chest exercises that I really like. I don't have 6 back exercises that I really like. So I just this morning rewrote it as an A-B split, just the 2 different workouts, full body, and I'll run it A-B-A, then B-A-B, then A-B-A, and kind of like three times every 2 weeks. And I like that on paper a lot more. I do think that this type of training I'm doing, where you are really, like, going in deep on the idea that frequency would provide some sort of unique benefit, the more equipment you have, the more different workouts you can have. The more you can do, like, an ABC split. But the less equipment you have, the less workouts you can do. There are people out there right now, and there are people just doing full body every other day, same workout, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing I'm becoming more okay with, which is, like, programming the same thing on an additional day for myself, for my clients. It's like not necessarily being so afraid of, like, oh, we did this already this week. It's like, yeah, so have you encountered some of those experiences of, like, well, maybe the best thing to do is actually just to do this exercise again?
Yeah, I find that to be a bit monotonous over time. Like you said, it took you 16 weeks to get to the point that all the setup of the single set stuff has become annoying. That's quite long in my mind. Like, I think the fact that you lasted 4 months on that is quite impressive. I feel like the problem of monotony and psychological burnout on a movement would occur for me quite quickly if I was doing that same exercise multiple times in a week. But the thing that I've found for me that I think fixes both of those problems, and it's what I'm implementing with this new 3 times a week program, is that I'm only picking really one exercise as, like, the primary one, but I'm doing many sets of it. So the progression model I'm using is that I'm starting every movement in the program at 5x5 with a 10 RM weight. And so that means that the first set has 5 RIR. It almost feels like, you know, a warm up on steroids or whatever. But by the time I get to the final set, it's 2-3 RIR, something like that. And that way I don't have to warm up multiple movements. I don't have to do multiple setups. Once it's there, it's just there. And then I have 2 weeks of these workouts. So I have, like, 2 different leg days, 2 different chest back days, and 2 different shoulder arm days. So I'm not hitting the same movement again for another 2 weeks, which keeps it fresh and exciting as well. And then on top of that, so the way I'm progressing this, which I also think is somewhat unique, it's actually like the inverse of the RP model, where they try to increase volume as you go. I'm actually reducing volume as I go. So I started with this 5x5 at the 10 RM. And then once I add weight week to week, I add weight week to week. And eventually I get to a point where that last set of 5 is basically at failure. And then I switch it to a 3x5 because I'm like, cool, I'm getting way more effective reps from the beginning. So now I only need 3 working sets of this. And so that's where I am right now. I'm 6 weeks into the program. I'm just transitioning from 5x5s to 3x5s on everything. And then my plan is that once the 3x5s get to a point where that final set of 5 again is at failure, which I assume will be in a few weeks, I'm going to drop to like a 2x6 to 8. And I'm going to take both those sets to failure, and I'm just going to run that for as long as I can, and then probably chill for a week, rinse, wash, repeat, go back to 5x5 and work forward from there. So I think it kind of keeps things fresh. It keeps me from having to have multiple different setups, but I still get to explore, you know, various movements over the 2 week microcycle.
Now I remember why I brought up Alex's comment about this idea of, like, we might get to maximum rate of muscle growth before we've optimized every variable. I might look at that program you just described, and, like, maybe there'd be, like, theoretical things that you're like, well, if you had to build one program to save the earth, like, you'd be like, maybe I wouldn't build this exact program. But you're doing enough of the things where, like, you might be at your stage of your fitness journey, you know, 20 years of lifting tons of muscle, where you're like, I'm maximizing the rate that my body can build muscle, which is to say very, very slow, way before I worry about optimizing every single little variable, because I'm just doing enough hard work. And on my side, sorry, on my side, I feel like this on paper is probably the best I could do. On paper is probably, without factoring in enjoyment, sustainability, any of that stuff, I think on paper, this to me, this sort of approach of higher frequency probably makes the most sense on paper, right? But I just think if I'm capped at 3 times 40 minutes, I can optimize every single tiny little variable I want. That I can't imagine that if I just took this exact same workout and just did a bro split with it, that I personally at this point in my life would, with my level of muscularity, which is not a ton, but you know, more, I didn't just start lifting yesterday, that I'd look a whole lot different. Like I don't know if I'd look a whole lot different if you just scrapped the idea of frequency and kept the volume and stuff. I think for me to ultimately push the needle, I probably can't efficiency my way there right now. There's probably, I need a bit more of a wrecking ball. I'm like, hey, you need to do more sets at some point, right? This is just, you can efficiency your way to, you know, I think I have a better chance of efficiencying my way to doing less and maintaining than I do efficiencying my way to like actually growing at maintenance calories on, you know, 120 minutes of lifting a week.
Yeah, I feel like I've become a bit nihilistic in this way, in that like, I very much believe that it kind of doesn't matter what approach you take, as long as you're training hard and eating sufficient calories and recovering. It really, to me, doesn't matter if you're doing 3 times a week full body with super low volumes, maybe even 2 times a week full body, or you're doing like a bro split PPL type setup where you're hitting 10 to 20 sets per muscle group per week. I just feel like at some point, you know, you've reached your genetic potential or close to it. And for any other changes to occur, like specifically in your situation or my situation, is we're not optimizing for that variable, in that the cardio that we're doing in some manner is detracting from the attention, focus, and energy that we could be applying to the weights. And so if I really wanted to, at this point, try to eke out the last 1 or 2% of gains that I have, I think it would be at the expense of my focus on cardio, and it would have to have a more diligent focus on the nutrition that's going into my body, the volume and the intensity of the weights that I'm doing, and just opening up more recovery resources to apply to the weights. But given the constraints of what we're doing, trying to do this like hybrid thing, I think what we need to optimize for is, or what we are optimizing for, is the balance and the lifestyle structure of it, so that we can achieve some results in both categories instead of necessarily trying to optimize the results in one category.
Totally. And then there's the weight gain part of it, where like I'm not at a body fat level where I can be like, I'm probably recomping, meaning like I'm netting weight maintenance while I'm building muscle and burning fat. Like, that's not happening. You know, could I build muscle at maintenance? Yes, but the actual definition of that would have to be a net increase in weight. I'd have to be building muscle at maintenance and gaining weight. I know that that's a weird thing when you just think about the terminology used there, but if you're overweight / newer to lifting, you can build muscle and lose fat at the same time and roughly maintain your weight, because you're roughly building muscle at the rate at which you're losing fat. I'm too lean and been doing this for too long for that circumstance to occur. And if I were to want to really know if I was building muscle, I'd have to just be eating enough to be gaining at least a little bit every 6 months, you know? I can't confidently say if I maintain 190 for the next 10 years that I'm going to be building any more muscle, because in order for that to be true, I'd have to also be losing that amount of fat. And I just don't think that that's happening at this level of leanness, which is, you know, reasonably lean, not crazy, crazy lean, but reasonably lean, where I don't think that that's happening.
Yeah, like you would see a tangible increase in your aesthetics at the same body weight, where you look at yourself in 5 years and you're like, yeah, I look way better than I did 5 years ago.
Yeah, you could do that if you have more body fat. Yeah, I just don't think you could do that if you're 15, you know, 10, 15 years into training and pretty lean. I just don't think that that's, I think you're probably, that person's going to have to see some body weight increases.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even at the point I've discussed on my podcast where I'm considering just kind of letting my body weight drop to 180, which I would assume needs to come with some muscle loss as well. Not a ton, but I would like to make 180 like a sustainable weight for me, not one that feels like I'm holding on to a deficit at like 8% body fat or something like that. You know, I'd love to be 180 and 12%, 13%, something like that. Because I just think that that helps me in moving around the world and helps me with my cardio performance.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, actually. The idea that I'm probably—I mean, it's true. While we look at things like grip strength and like muscles are good, like it is not true that more muscle beyond a certain point is more healthful, more longevity promoting. Certainly a U-shaped curve. You know, these people like, oh, I
Yeah.
promise, Ronnie Coleman is not the healthiest man on earth. You know, like you know Phil Heath. These guys are so you know having the most muscle physically. That I wouldn't. You know, listen. Person listening who's like just getting into lifting, you are on the up part of that curve where more muscle is going to help you a ton. We're talking Brian's like super mega jack, 25 years in. I keep adding years to the amount that you've been lifting. I was like
27 is 27.
27. Okay. I was like 15 years, 17 years. Where like you are probably right, where you're like, if you were like optimizing longevity, you might actually, you know, seek having less muscle. Would you
Yes.
say that?
Yeah, that's my thought. I mean, I believe that 195 Brian compared to 180 Brian, like both are going to be sufficiently jacked to have enough muscle that that's not going to be a detriment to my longevity. And so I think that being 15 pounds less, even if body fat percentages are the same, I just think walking around in the world at 15 pounds less is likely better for my longevity.
If you on that, let's say you just like elevator pitch talking about like an exercise program built for longevity, I think this kind of is a parallel conversation. If you were like, hey, like, what's an exercise program look like across the week for longevity? How many days of lifting does that have? Because I think that the answer to that question also tells us what level of muscularity we think goes, you know, goes towards optimal longevity here. And so I have an idea of what I'd answer, but if you were like, hey, how many days of lifting for if you were within an exercise program that was like, you know, again, Brian Johnson's whatever, if you're Brian Johnson trying to live for fucking ever or whatever, you know, how many days of lifting is in that program?
I think less about it on days and more about it being somewhere between like 90 and 120 minutes. And so I feel like, you know, it's probably not optimal to do that in one day, but whether you do that in 2 or 3 days or even four, I don't think really moves the needle so much. I think any of those are fine.
Yeah, I'm with that too. And so we have like 2 to 3 days of lifting. 2 days for maybe 45 minutes and then maybe 3 days for
Yeah.
30 minutes.
Something like that,
Yeah.
yeah.
And you're just not going to get pro bodybuilder physique. My point is that tells us the level of muscularity that we're thinking is going towards health. And it's not being, you know, as jacked as humanly possible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I've told you, I've been in this abbreviated training Facebook group for a while now. It's actually the exact same way I got my start training, and I was in the Hard Gainer training group in 1997 or something like that. But the philosophy of these abbreviated or Hard Gainer programs is essentially either like two full body workouts a week or three full body workouts a week, more or less. I mean, they some upper lower stuff. Like it's basically abbreviated in the sense that most of these guys are spending within that range of time per week, like 2 hours a week, plus or minus, right? So there are these guys in this group that legitimately are competing in professional bodybuilding, natural bodybuilding, training 2 hours a week for their entire lives. And so it's like the average person going out there chasing longevity is probably not going to be training in the same manner these guys are training, even if they're
Sure.
training for the same amount of time. But I think to say that you can't maximize or at least get really close to maximizing your muscle on a 2 times a week full body program, I just don't believe that to be correct anymore. And I think you can even look back at, you know, the 1940s, 1950s, like Reg Park, John Grimmick, and these guys that were training more or less 3 times a week, full body, 5x5 style. Like it to me, I don't know that time and volume are necessarily the number one and two variables that are going to determine whether you maximize your muscularity or not.
Yeah, I also think of when you say something like 2 hours of lifting per week, I think of that as a meaningful amount. That's probably what I'm doing right now, and I think that's a meaningful amount. I think that that's not nothing to scoff at. I think 2 hours of lifting a week, you can be jacked for sure. I think
Yeah, but
you.
that would be
Go ahead.
that would be considered very abbreviated compared to like the current slate of evidence-based research and all the, 50 set studies and all this
Totally.
stuff.
Totally. Cass put out a good post after the Pelin meta came out, and it was with the volume, the volumetric regression, where he was like, hey, if you want to hit 10 working sets per muscle group per week, 10 fractional sets of per muscle group per week, you're looking at, 6 to 10 hours of training, somewhere in that range, depending on how you split up your rest periods and sets and stuff like that. And so that's a lot. That's a lot. And I think if you're like, hey, well, okay, that's 6+ hours a week, I can get pretty jacked into. I just can't, whatever. We're of a similar school of thought in the, like, I'm not, I posted today on social media. I was like, I'm not interested in maximizing hypertrophy. And like, neither are you. Like, neither is the person reading this. Like, you might have periods of your life where you're really into it, but when it comes really down to what is ultimately sustainable, like, you should be maximizing the things that matter the absolute most to you in your life. And those are the things that you're willing to go into a diminishing return for. And this just isn't that thing, no matter how much you really like it. You're not, unless you're a pro bodybuilder. I'm just, and again, I don't mean to pretend like I know what everyone wants. I'm just saying the people that I come into contact with probably listen to this podcast, listen to me on social media. Those are, you maximize hypertrophy is just going, or there's all, dude, there's like, I've, to my own detriment, entrenched myself a little bit to see what's going on in these like science-based lifters, this whole like fucking TikTok arguments that are going on. And there's the obsession with, it's like me eating my, I'm like a kid eating popcorn on the sideline, like watching people argue about like, 3x full body is vaulted now. Paul Carter said it's bad. You don't do it anymore because there's one meta analysis from 2 years ago that he just decided to use. Just thinking like, everyone's obsessed with what's the best way to maximize hypertrophy. And it's like most people reading this content aren't interested in that. They're trying to maximize the time that they can realistically allot to training. Unless you're 16 to 20 with no responsibilities and you can lift 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, go nuts, do that. Think about maximizing. But you should be thinking, how can I maximize efficiency with the time that I have?
Yeah, I feel like maximizing for durability and consistency over time are going to produce much more benefits in the long run than trying to maximize for the immediate result. So, yeah, I did have periods, where I was trying to maximize hypertrophy, and that ultimately was my entire goal. And I was training 90 minutes 6 days a week. I mean, 90 minutes 5 days a week, whatever, something like that, in the gym lifting weights. And I can't say that my physique is like that much different than it was then, and now I'm maximizing for completely or optimizing for completely different things.
Yeah, let me ask you a question that I've been thinking about a bit. I'm gonna ask you an initial question that is not my question, but it will serve as a stepping stone to the question I want to ask. And after how many weeks of attempted dieting and not losing weight before you say it's not working, something's got to change?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I've ever actually
Maybe not
been
you,
there,
but
but
hypothetically, if someone's like, hey, if
hypothetically.
someone's like, hey, I'm not losing weight, your first question is, well, how long's it been? And what's the answer that they could give you where you would say, okay, yeah, maybe something's up, we gotta look at this? Or what's the sort of answer where you might say, well, it hasn't quite been long enough to determine that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would also depend on how closely I was working with this person, or if it was just like a random DM that I got from
Sure.
somebody I don't know.
Sure.
But I think like somewhere in the 2 to 3 week range.
I think that's super reasonable. I think if you're like, if someone's like, hey, I haven't lost any weight, and they say, it's only been a week, you're like, all right, I don't want to hear it. You could be doing everything perfectly, and we still cannot determine that. If you swear up and down that you're doing everything perfectly, at what point do you think, all right, maybe you're not in a deficit, right? Maybe this just, you've adapted, this isn't a deficit for you. I think 2 to 4 weeks is super, super reasonable answer. And the reason you're giving that answer is because there are acute short-term variables that can blur diagnostics, right? Body weight fluctuations, water, hormones, the atmosphere pressure, like barometric pressure, all this weird shit. I've been mulling over the same answer for lifting. And so it's like, after how many weeks of doing the training, should I expect to progressively overload? Now there's a, or be able to do more. But there's a caveat. These things, you have to be already at your limit, right? Because you can progress for two different reasons. One is you could just be trying harder because you left reps in the tank on purpose, Right? Like I've been having this chat with my group quite a bit where it's like, you know, we get to the end of the program, weeks 4 and 5, let's say, and because those are like the peak weeks, right? Like there's an expectation of like, these are supposed to be my best weeks of training. I should be progressing. It's like, that's opposite, right? This is where progression is going to slow down. You were progressing weeks 1, 2, and 3 because you left room to do so. And so I think some people get in their own head of like, well, I'm not progressing very fast. And that means that something bad is happening. I was progressing better during this other period. Mm. And that other period is usually earlier in the program or when an exercise was new. And they left reps in the tank, so they were progressing. Or that it's a new exercise and they were gaining neurological adaptations. Let's say that you've been doing a program. Well, let's start with, I'm putting you on the spot, but just ballpark. Because the truth is I don't have an answer. So it's not like I'm going to come over the top with like the correct answer. I don't know. But after how many weeks of doing a new exercise, do you feel like you're like, I've gotten all the neurological adaptations I can get?
That's a good question.
While you're thinking, for the listener, what we're talking about here is that when you start a new exercise, you get rapidly better at it, not because you've built all this incredible muscle, but because your coordination has improved. You've basically become better at doing the movement efficiently. Your brain's ability to communicate with your muscles to move in a way that's going to be the best for moving this weight efficiently has gotten better. You haven't actually built much muscle. It's not that, you know, like when you start a new exercise, you'll find that you get rapidly better at it, but that's not because you're building a ton of muscle. It's because you're getting rapidly better at doing that exercise. And the example I always give is if you pick up golf, you know, within the first month, you're going to be able to hit the ball farther, and that has nothing to do with the fact that you gained a whole bunch of like golf specific muscles. It's because you're way more coordinated and you know how to do this better. And so that doesn't last forever though. Cause if you keep playing golf, all of it, it's not like in that first month, you can drive the ball 100 yards further. But in that second month, you won't be getting as much better. And in that third month, you won't be getting as much better. And so with lifting, it's the same way. If you pick up a new exercise, you'll get rapidly better at it for a while. But at some point, you are so good at this exercise now that you're no longer making those neurological adaptations. And you are now left with a rate of progression that is concomitant or equal to the actual rate of muscle growth, right? Only two things can help you lift more weight, and that's an increase in neurological adaptations and more muscle mass. And so at what point would you say after X amount of weeks of doing an exercise, you're like, I am as good at this as I'll ever be, and me being able to put weight on the bar or add a rep is down to the fact that I put on the muscle needed to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a number of variables to consider as well, such as the complexity of the exercise. Like it would be a lot faster to adapt to that on a bicep curl than it would be on an RDL or something along those lines. But the one I'm thinking of in my head right now is a hack squat machine. We used to go to San Diego every year for 6 weeks in the winter. And there would be this hack squat machine that I would never use except for the time that I was in San Diego. So I would get there and we were always there for 6 weeks. And the first 4 weeks, I would always get those neurological progressions. And then by right around that time, around week 5 or week 6, as I was beginning to leave, I would get stuck and feel like the neurological progression was no longer occurring. And I wouldn't have needed to, you know, have gained muscle mass to your point to have gotten stronger. So I think for something like that, around that 4 to 6 week mark, but it really does depend. I mean, training age is a huge factor as well. I know people that have been able to neurologically adapt to movements for 6 months with a much younger training age, maybe even more, like same movement every session, adding weight and maybe not even adding muscle, just, you know, neurologically adapting to that movement. So I do think it's very variable and there's a number of factors that you have to consider in that answer.
Yeah. On that note, hold on, you said something there. Training age is a big one because movements are different, but they're not as different as, you know, lifting weights is to golf. So like if you have like a, I'm going to make this up, but like your neurological adaptations to golf will be quicker if you're like a cricket athlete and you're like, well, I swing that bat in a very similar way. And so while this golf swing is different, you know, I might neurologically adapt quicker. And so it's like, yeah, if you've been doing dumbbell lateral raises, do you make neurological adaptations on a machine lateral raise? You absolutely do. But because the lateral raise motion is something that you're somewhat familiar with, this is a little bit slightly different. You'll adapt more quickly. And because a machine lateral raise has next to no coordination component really to it, you'll also adapt more quickly. So it absolutely differs from exercise and from person to person for sure. I actually love the answer you ultimately gave, which is like in that 4 to 6 week range, you know, a little quicker for some people in some things, a little, listen, you might be neurologically adapting to like barbell RDLs for many months when you first start to train. And I want to for a second paint those neurological adaptations in a negative light, because they're not negative. They're fantastic. They're awesome. They're a super important part of like getting better at lifting and all of that stuff. But the negative part, it's like taking creatine during a fat loss phase to me. Because if you start a deficit in day one and you're taking creatine, you could for 28 days be putting on water weight. And it's blurring the diagnostics. You don't know if you're losing weight or not. And when you're making neurological adaptations, you don't really know if the training is where it really needs to be. Now, this doesn't really make a practical difference. I'll get to the point in a second. It doesn't really matter, because you should be sticking to movements long enough to neurologically adapt. And then you get into the really good training and it's all good. It's all good. We're not like, I'm not, neurological adaptations should happen. It's great. It's all good. But they are a pat you give yourself on the back that I think people don't understand quite well. And it's why program hopping makes people, you know, feel like they're doing a great job. It's why huge changes to programming makes people have a lot of fun. You know, people have more fun on programs that change a lot because the percentage of time where they feel like they're progressing is higher, because they change the program every month to totally new stuff and they get rapidly better at all of it. And then they get new stuff and they get rapidly better at all of it. But that whole time, you know, you might not have been losing fat if we pair analogies here. You might just be feeling like, yo, I'm doing it. But you weren't actually good enough at that activity yet to reap all of the max benefits. Now, I want to paint a different scenario. Let's use that hack squat. You're in San Diego. You go there for 6 weeks. Let's say after 4 weeks, the first couple of weeks, you're like, oh, I'm like, every time you get in it, it feels better. It feels smoother. You know where your feet go. You have your eccentric down. You know where the pads go. Everything feels locked in. Maybe 4, 5, 6 weeks in, you're like, this is my home machine now. I feel very at home at it. And the second way people almost like get off to feeling like they're doing good work is they leave a whole bunch of reps in the tank early on in the cycle, which, by the way, I think you should leave some reps in the tank early on in the cycle. But at some point, you don't have any more neurological adaptations to make and you are training to failure. That's not the gold standard. I want to paint that as a hypothetical. And now the only way you add weight on the bar or reps is by actually having put on muscle that allows you to do so. It's like after that first month of the creatine or whatever, you know, now you're actually looking at the data that you're looking for, which is just the fat lost, that's not true, but is water weight and all that stuff from a million other reasons. But my curiosity is, how long would you stick with that hack squat not being able to progress before you thought something's wrong, you know? And again, it depends on the movement, because some exercises, it depends on the rep range and the exercise, right? How many reps am I doing? How much load am I doing? Because if you're doing an exercise where you use a lot of load, chances are you have the opportunity to add small increments of load. If you're doing higher reps, you have an opportunity to add a smaller incremental rep progression. But we can add some context, no problem. But if I said to you, Brian, like, hey, you know, I'm your client and you're like, hey, I see you, you know, how are you doing on the hack squats? And you're like, I'm like, you know, I've been trying to add that eighth rep for the last month and I'm training to failure, and you see me, I'm training to failure. Do you balk at that? Does that make you think, okay, something's up? Or are you like, no, like, that's what we'd expect once you don't have any more neurological adaptations to make and you're training to failure?
On a movement like the hack squat that's so demanding, but also has such a heavy total load, I think I'm less likely to stick with it for longer in that exact manner, trying to get that one extra rep. And I'm much more likely to take one of those other approaches you mentioned earlier, such as if I'm lifting 600 pounds, well, I could in theory add 3 pounds to this stack, which is half of a percentage point, and I could still get the same number of reps that I was getting, which then makes me feel like I'm making progress. But like, I've also seen you struggle with the lying cable Y raise for like 5 or 6 weeks and not be able to get an extra rep and not be able to get an extra rep. And I think with a movement like that, I'm much more likely to just stick with it and just keep doing the work and not stress about it, because A, the total load is low. So it's not like microloading would even be that effective, although I may try that. But also, I just feel like it's less psychologically taxing, and getting into the hack squat to not make progress week after week can begin to beat you down a little bit more than the same thing occurring on the Y raise.
Yeah, I will take an extreme position here just for fun, just to like point paint it. This is not my position, but I think I'd like to I would not like to. None of these are how I actually feel, but I'm just going to say it. Like, almost glorify slower progression as a sign that you've arrived at the best training you could have. And you know for damn sure that you're moving extra weight week to week or month to month because you've actually added muscle tissue. You know for a fact there's no more neurological adaptations. You know for a fact there's no more like, oh, I added a rep because last week was 2 RIR, so I could have always done one more. And I almost seek out those moments to lean in, to double down on, because I almost know that the alternative is, and again, I don't feel this way, but I'm playing with it. The alternative is me letting myself off the hook, changing the exercise, and saying, I'm going to go to a new exercise. You know why? Because I bet you for the next 3 to 5 weeks, it makes me feel really good. Because I'm adding weight, I'm adding load, and it's just, oh, that's so nice. Am I building more muscle during that period? I would say either definitively no, or for the vast majority of time, no. Because I do think if you're just sticking with the, so I'll use the example, the Y raise. I started the cycle at 30 pounds. I was doing sets of 10. And that's like, fuck it, I'm going to 40 pounds. Went to 40 pounds, could only do 4. And I was like, ah, shit. And so I was like, what do I do? Like, and so I was like, I'll stick with it. And so for 6 weeks, I couldn't add an additional rep. But I thought to myself, this is a small muscle group, right? This is just my medial delt, if I'm doing this appropriately, a little trap, lower trap, whatever. How many weeks of doing this before I can add enough medial delt muscle to get a 25% boost in my reps? You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to add an additional 25% of performance. And so to me, I was like, that probably takes 6 weeks, you know, to add that, you know. But if I wanted, I could go to 41 pounds, right? And maybe every week I could maybe add 1 pound. And by the way, that is probably the smarter thing to do. I think I actually don't know if that matters so much, but it would have made me feel better to be doing a little bit more over that time. My point is, I've been a little bit like glorifying that. Like, I want to get to that point because I feel like I don't want to be frustrated with a movement because I'm not progressing and let myself off the hook by feeling better about going to another thing. If the training is good, and the training is good, I know how to do this exercise, I know exactly the weight and reps that are going to get me in the ballpark of where I want to be, why am I just going to go do something else? Now, that is an extreme position, because I think that the extreme version of that is you never change anything at all, and you probably do run into staleness, and there is actually some element of novelty that's good. I would not say doing the same program verbatim year round, year after year after year, is the best plan. So I don't know where that point is where you actually do let yourself off the hook for the productive side. I think you can change exercises, no problem. If your reason is like, dude, I fucking hate this thing and I'm not motivated to train anymore because I'm just coming in here and hammering the I'm down with that. Let's change it. No problem. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think your point of letting things kind of grow stale and having to push through is the true representation of whether progress is actually occurring. And any time that you give in or take the easy way out and swap a movement, you're blurring your diagnostics. And it's like, to your point, like, you don't know if you're actually making progress, and likely you're not. I mean, because now you have to go through the whole process of neurologically adapting to the movement again, and eventually you're going to get stuck again at this new movement you chose. And then do you again switch to a different movement because it's just getting hard and you're not motivated because you're not progressing? And I mean, honestly, like, this idea of just choosing basic movements and sticking with them come hell or high water, aside from, you know, an injury or an overuse or something like that, that's right out of the abbreviated training playbook. Like, the amount of times that I would get grilled when I was a teenager by these guys on the forums because I would get stuck for 2 or 3 weeks and write to them about how I need to change this movement because it's not progressing, and the amount of responses just right down of like all these guys being like, no, you're 18, you need to stop changing your program, don't be a pansy, like all of these things. And like, man, I get it now. Like, I get it. You know, it is a badge of honor to have gotten to a point where you've trained a movement so hard that you're stuck there for a couple of weeks and you still have to keep showing up and bringing it psychologically just to get that extra rep or to get that extra pound or whatever it is. Like, I think there's something valiant about that.
So let's take it from we both run a group program, and you will invariably have somebody who says, I'm struggling with blank, I'm not progressing, right? And it's the fat loss analogy is perfect because it's like, hey, I'm not losing weight. And like my first thought is, okay, you say you're not losing weight, you say you're not progressing, over what time scale? And have you earned the right to be frustrated, right? Like are you, same with the fat loss thing, what am I checking? I'm checking how long it's been. I'm checking if you're actually doing what you, if you're actually doing what you need to be doing to feel aggrieved, you know? And so if someone's like, hey, I'm not progressing, that's a question that has really made me think about, again, because we're running group programs, we can't do the nuance of like, what exercise is it? What individual is it? You know, like why are they in a slight surplus or slight deficit? But like, I tend to, I'll go on my side. But like, if someone's like, hey, I'm not progressing on this, I tend to be like, well, if somebody added one rep to their PR, not one rep from the beginning of the cycle, right? Like, cause you know, if you start with two RIR by week three or four, you're really at like what you're capable of. Right, you've a little bit of neurological adaptations, maybe, and you've got, you're at failure, 101 RIR by like week four, let's say. Take that number. If that number can go up once each cycle, that's one rep every 6 weeks. And and I think that represents, if you scale that, like pretty crazy. I mean, if you're a listener right now and you take a flat dumbbell press where you have taken it to failure and you remember what that last rep feels like. And you're like, man, this has been a really hard set, shaking, you're pushing, you got a 5 second concentric. And I tell you in a year from now, you'll be able to do 8 more reps at that weight. I think most people would fucking snatch that up. And that's you progressing once every, you know, 5 to 6 weeks. That's adding one rep to your PR once every 5 to 6 weeks. I think when you scale that out, and I'm trying to play with that because I think there's nuance to it, but it's like once you know that this is what you're capable of in that week 4 and 5 range, if that number goes up by one rep every cycle, I think most people would first be like, oh my God, I'm only adding one rep. And then if you scale that out, you're like, oh my God, I can do 10 more reps of what is currently my 8 rep max. You know, I think that, does that make you feel a certain way?
Yeah, I mean, that's the exact example that we used to use back in the day when I was in the abbreviated training group, and the whole like kind of attitude around it was this notion of, if you just add 1 pound to your movement every week over a year, you know, you take 2 weeks off to deload or vacation or whatever, you have 50 pounds added to your exercise. Like, how would you feel if your bench went from 175 to 225 in a year? You'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah. Like, I'll take that. That's amazing. And so it's the same idea. I think anytime you can extrapolate stuff out over longer term, it kind of makes it a little bit more profound and understandable by the client. And it's also a good way to frame things to stay motivated too, because like you and I both program in a similar manner, or maybe me more so than you these days, where we do start that cycle a little bit further from failure and progress forward. And so very rarely does someone ever actually post in the group and say, I'm stuck, I'm not making progress, because we've created the cycle in such a manner that we mitigate that question occurring at all.
Totally.
So the bigger question is, like, occasionally every 6 months we do a strength cycle where we spend 7 weeks, we do a strength cycle. It focuses on the big barbell lifts. We test a one rep max at the end, that sort of thing. So we'll see that more often, where someone will be like, hey, you know, the last two strength cycles we did, I PR'd my deadlift at 265. It would, is an example I remember, 265, strong deadlift for a girl, especially 130 pound female. And so she was saying, you know, I hit 265 last cycle, the prior cycle I hit 265 as well. Like, I really, this cycle, I want to try to make sure that I hit 270 or something like that, which is great. Like, I love the attitude. Like, I just want to get 5 pounds on this thing. So the conversation is around, you know, what can we do to make sure that, like, how can we approach the earlier weeks of the cycle to try to create the situation where we're now 5 pounds heavier at the end of the cycle? So that would be more the question that we receive.
No, and I like that idea of having a benchmark somewhere, right? You know, a benchmark somewhere. And this conversation is born out of the, like, changing your program, because I think that, you know, starting the cycle a couple reps in the tank, like, I love that. I still do that. I still advocate it. I think that it just makes a ton of sense. But if you're sticking with that movement long enough, you'll find out, you'll exhaust the neurological adaptations, and you'll get enough reps, enough weeks under your belt where the training gets really, really hard and you are really sure what you're capable of. I watch my one-on-one clients take a couple of months to get to the point where the movements are in a place where they are no longer neurologically adapted. They've worked through little tinkering to the setup, right? It's like a little bit of bench height, a bench click here, a cable click here, a different grip here. And it's like, we need to get through all that stuff. Like, I wrote in my newsletter recently about, like, there's a something that happens with changing programs. The first is you get sore. The second is you get rapidly better. And if you let yourself latch onto those two things as an association for good training, the irony is the good training happens when those things go away. When progression is slower and you are getting less sore is indicative of better training. Now, of course, in the context of you training hard to, and still having those outcomes. And I want to blast that a little bit of, like, the good training happens when you are doing all the things. By the way, the assumptions you and I are making are that people are being consistent with their training, they're eating enough protein, they're at very least maintenance calories, that you're doing enough to, I don't mean this morally, but, like, you're doing enough to deserve to feel like you should progress. But, like, I love when someone's like, hey, man, I've had 2 or 3 weeks at the same weight and reps. Like, I don't want that for you. Like, I'd love for you to keep progressing. But what that tells me is that the training's probably really darn good. You are training really, really hard. There's no more neurological adaptations. And something about that, because, of course, that could be a circumstance where you're, like, not eating enough and you missed a bunch of weeks of training and you don't deserve to progress. But the person who is doing enough to deserve to progress and is coming up again, I don't want to glorify, like, this sort of martyr attitude of, like, not progressing is good. That's not what I mean. But, like, you know, if you... we could design programs, you and I, with a group where people get more sore and get have more weeks where they feel like they're progressing, and it would be worse training. And that's kind of the point that I'm getting at.
Yeah, I mean, just throwing novelty at people is guaranteed to make them sore, and that doesn't make effective training at all. And then because it's novel, you feel like you're progressing for a number of weeks neurologically, but you're not actually necessarily building strength or building muscle. So yeah, I totally resonate with all of that. And I also wouldn't want to glorify that either. And I do think that, like, a client could see that as the coach taking the easy way out, where it's like, dude, I haven't progressed for 3 weeks. And you're like, awesome, dude, that's great. I'm so glad to hear that, you know? And they're like, but bro, I'm like, I'm here, I'm paying you money because I want to progress.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of caught in the
But that's why this question was born. That's why this question was born, which is like, at what number of weeks have I gone from proud to alarmed? And I just, I'm still working through that. And you're right. It can't be a single answer for different exercises, different contexts. But I am thinking about, like, how general can I set my flag down on that sort of an answer where I'm like, yeah, Instagram DM is a good one because, like, this is a context where you usually don't know anyone much about somebody. So, like, if someone's like, hey, I haven't lost any weight, like, I feel confident being like, come back to me after 2 to 4 weeks. Right. And so, like, what's the similar style answer for, like, hey, I'm not progressing at this thing, you know? And it's like, I usually think, you know, it's also how new you are to lifting, right? Of course, if you're newer to lifting, you are making a bunch of neurological adaptations, but you're also building muscle faster. So, like, I'm trying to work through a framework like, if you're brand new to training, it's every 1 or 2 weeks max. You're probably adapting. You should be making gains. If you're in, like, an intermediate, like, second to third year, maybe it's like every 1 to 3 weeks. And if you're advanced, maybe it's like every 2 to 6 weeks. Depending on the available increments of progression, right? Like, you know, like, I could add my 1 pound fractional plate to my Y raise, and I bet you I could do 5 also, totally. I'm also just interestingly not sure. Actually, no, that I was going to say, I'm not sure if that actually makes it any better, but yeah, 5 reps at 50 and 5 reps at 51's better. So I actually think that
absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that seeking out that incremental progress, I like that, actually. I think in my group, I will suggest people progress by the smallest increment available whenever possible. Sometimes with, like, leg press or something, I'll suggest that, okay, smallest, don't go up by 2.5 on your 500-pound leg press. You could probably go up by a smidge more, 2.5% or something like that. But
I'm a huge fan of the microloading. I've used it literally throughout my entire training career. I've had the same set of microplates for probably 2 decades. And I use them on everything. Like, even currently, if I find myself getting stuck on something, I'm very likely to hang a 1/2 pound plate from each stack of the cable so that I can increase my lateral raises by 1/2 pound per stack. And I will progress in that way across many movements. I think to the leg press example you used, I don't know if I saw a study on this or if someone just told me this, but many years ago, it was somehow passed on to me that if you're progressing by less than 1% of the total load, that your body is going to struggle to be able to detect that. And obviously, there's a limit to that. Like, it can't go on forever. but that does seem to be like a pretty solid number where I can eke out a number of weeks of progress continuing just by simply adding less than 1% to the total load.
Yeah. I actually seems like a very obvious thing I should have thought of, but I think even just for me, I haven't bothered. I was being cocky. I haven't bothered to seek out. I even like doing like a chest supported row on the cable, doing like eight reps of 300. And I just haven't even thought of doing like 302.5. Like I've just, I guess I've just been thinking I'll just stay here until I get that ninth one, But I do think that 302.5 for eight is better and will get me more muscle faster, technically. So I, maybe I've under appreciated the seeking out that incremental progress. And I think if I was super duper hungry for gains, I think that's absolutely what I would do is really lean into that a bit more.
Well, psychologically, it's just a lot nicer to finish a workout and feel like you did good work than to feel like you were just stuck in cement.
Yeah. I've had this, so I'm at week 12. And I've had enough of these experiences of sticking it out when I might have otherwise twisted, and then having it pay off for me that I built some confidence around it. Or so maybe it's made me like a bit like less likely to take action, whatever that word is. Where like I'm more okay with being like, cool, I have 3 weeks where I don't progress. I know the training is damn good. I'm close to failure. I'll get that ninth rep or whatever. But I think if I was really hungry, I'd add that 1 pound. I think that that's absolutely the right plan. Cool. Yeah, there's some there's that that's like that it all falls under the bucket that you and I have chatted about a million times. I'll be respectful. I want to be respectful of your time. I know we're over an hour. Of like, I don't want to do the nothing matters thing, but like and the less trained you are, the less everything matters. Just like getting in the gym, hurling some metal around, it's probably going to work pretty well. But I do feel like I've just been coaching and doing my group program for long enough, and I know you've been doing this long enough too, where I'm like, am I how much do I want my clients to feel like they're progressing versus how much do I want to seek out them getting the absolute best training they can? And I just think there's a sweet spot. That's all. This is not a like you can hear us talk and be like, oh, I don't change my program ever because I never want to ever blur a diagnostic ever. That's not true. In these 12 weeks, I've changed quite a few things. One of my new mantras is don't change your program, make it better. And so, like the changes you're making to your program, and I think making it better, you can say making it better is doing something to make me more motivated to do it. I'm down with that totally. But I do think just don't change it for changing its sake, right? Change it for something's wrong with it. Like it's progressed to a point where, okay, with the setup and the weight, it doesn't feel right. Something's not right about, I have a better option somewhere else. I don't know if I've ever run into, and we've had these chats before, I don't know if I've ever run into a person who has stuck with a movement long enough, deserving to progress, and hasn't. That time frame exists, I'm sure. I just haven't seen it.
Yeah, not in the evidence-based culture. Like I think in the evidence-based culture these days, there's this kind of idea that as long as you're getting the volume and the stimulus, it doesn't so much matter what the movement you're doing is, or if it's the same movement you were doing. It's like just work to the designated RIR, make sure you're doing enough volume, recover, nutrition. And so I think that's kind of given people this like free card to say like, oh, well, this movement's boring to me now, or this movement, I don't know, maybe that one would be more fun, or like whatever sort of comical reason they want to throw out there for changing the movement, it seems to be validated.
The last thing I'll say on this is like if you're using more variation and you're making gains, amazing. Like you're making progress and you are happy with all of that, then amazing. I think where this was born was I have two clients that they'll listen to this and they'll know exactly who I'm talking about that were with me for 2 years. First year made amazing progress, recomped, just recomped, built muscle, lost fat, changed their physiques dramatically. Second year, they were underwhelmed. I'd say they recomped and changed their physiques, but much, 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 much less than they did the first year. And so we came to a sort of metaphorical back to the drawing board of like, okay, well, what are the things we could even do to give myself the best chance of not having that same thing happen again? Of course, understanding that nothing will ever be like that first year ever.
Right,
But
right.
just having their first moment of underwhelm and being like, okay, no more 90%. I want to get 97% of what we can do. And to me, that this was one of those things that came up where it's like, hey, let's hold a higher standard of changing something, and let's not twist at the, you know, at a 3 week stagnation in a lift, just to get off to trying a new machine for 3 weeks while you figure it out and put 10 pounds on it every single week. Like, eventually you will arrive here again, where the training is, your rate of progression is limited to your rate of muscle growth, which is really, 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 really slow. And so that is one thing where I'm like, yeah, if you're a client out there or you're a person out there and you're not thrilled with your results, this is just one thing I might look at and be like, hey, have I been mentally getting off to just doing new shit where I feel good and feel sore, but, you know, and then a year goes by and I'm like, oh, what happened? I was getting better that whole year, so it seemed, and I was sore that whole year. So I don't want to go to the extreme with that, because I have a group program where I think I have a duty to keep it interesting enough that people are going to enjoy it. And I do not think that keeping the program the exact same all the time is the best thing anyway. It's not like just wrestling with that.
I have a question for you that may be helpful for everyone as well. So on your hack press machine, the machine that we both have the same one of, you spent a lot of time over the last year and change hanging out in like the mid 500s, and your sets looked hard and they looked like you said they were hard. And then something happened over the last like month or two, and now you're in the 600s. And you're doing like the same amount of reps that you were doing in the mid 500s. So what do you think explains that?
Yeah, and this is a great point. I think my perception of effort changed, right? So I think nothing changed. I think I could have done that more or less the whole time. And I'll tell you, this has happened with running many times where my RPE has just changed. And sometimes it's more clear, right? You can't just like fool your way, wow, I could really curl the 40s this whole time, you know? But when we're talking about a compound lift where there are a lot of muscles involved, there's more neural drive. Like you can do more from like getting in the zone. You can't like in the zone your way to like an extra 3 bicep curls, whatever. Maybe you can. But I think that not much has changed. I think that actually goes to the point of what we're talking about, where it's not even that I was making neurological adaptations. It's just my perception of what was hard was evolving. And so I was doing I was doing a 570 for sets of 7 or 8. And now I can do like sets of like 650 for sets of like 6-ish, you know? And I don't think I've gotten any stronger at that. I think I made neurological adaptations. And I also think that there was a really wide range of what felt hard. And it's just that I was on the lower bound, the lower part of what felt hard. And I think it happens to me with running as well, where I'm like, hey, if I run whatever, we don't need to put numbers on it, but like, if, you know, I could do a training run in training and then find out that the truth is, I'll tell you an example is like, so your 10K time, you know, somewhere between your 5 and 10K time is what we'd call your lactate threshold. And it depends on the person and all this stuff. Let's say I can run a 10K in an 8 minute pace, a little bit faster, whatever. But when I'm training at 8 minute pace, even a couple of minutes feels hard, you know? Yeah. And so there was like this doing the leg press. I'm like, you know what? 570 for sets of 7 or 8, like it feels hard by the end. But, and so like, I just, my perception of what hard felt or what hard was or what hard felt like just was evolving. And you could just be like, dude, you were being a little bitch. You know, like you could, I mean, that is totally fair, but being a little bitch is one way of saying what I'm saying, which is like you were finding out what hard really was. And you don't find out what hard really was if you change it after 4 weeks. I would have just gone to doing something else and never actually felt it. And so that is also a tool I use with clients who are maybe not so inclined to have that dig deep, make it hurt mentality. Because if you just keep it the same and you try and progress a little bit, maybe we did have 10 weeks of suboptimal training, but we're here now. We've arrived at you figuring out just by the pursuit of progression. Oh crap. I had more in me. You ever seen the movie Unbreakable with Bruce Willis?
Yeah.
So he's like, kid keeps putting on weight on the bar. Jenna is that movie. Jenna will just be like, I wonder if I can do this. And then she'll be able to, she's like, I wonder if I can do one pull-up the other day. And she's like, oh, I can do 8 pull-ups. I'm like, shut the fuck up. She'll walk in. I'll never forget. I was doing RDLs one time and she came home from like a 12-hour EMT shift. And I think I was RDLing like 255 or something. And she just like walked in, like put her keys down. She's like, I wonder if I can lift this. Just like, like deadlifting it for reps. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
That's great.
Like, yeah.
I actually think though, that story of your hack machine and your running both teach a really important lesson. which is that you don't have to train at your maximum to be able to perform at your maximum. And therefore, there might be a ton of value in actually spending a little bit of time at these submaximal efforts to the point where, like, it's the philosophical view of progressive overload, where it's like you don't have to just force progression. You just keep doing the same shit. And eventually you realize that, oh, I'm actually capable of a lot more. And then you can go manifest that and make it real. And so that's kind of to bring it all for full circle. That's kind of what I'm trying to do with the training program I'm personally doing right now, where I'm doing this 5x5 at a 10 RM, is I'm just trying to accrue volume and create these neurological adaptations with no compromises that might occur as you're closer to failure. And therefore, I think that's ultimately going to lead to me being able to manifest more strength output when the time comes to test.
Yeah, you don't need to be training. I don't need to be training to failure to build the muscle I would need to add an extra rep, is what we're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. My goal is to, the thing is, my goal from this outset was to stick with the same program long enough to find out. And I've done this once before, but I jumped ship because it was, I was not enjoying it. And I think the running goals came in and I had to change my program. You know, with this idea of change, stay with my program long enough to see what happens. I think I jumped ship from that a little bit early. And frankly, my training was a little bit all over the place. But even it's funny, the attempt to keep my program the same has been challenging. I just don't have the perfect equipment that infinitely scales with getting stronger. So I'll like run into, I'm not even that strong, but like I'll run into something where like I'm almost out of like free weight dumbbell weight, you know, like gonna be at 8 reps at the 95s, and I don't even want to get the hundreds because they're holding my leg extension down on the ground. So I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go to barbell press after that. So like my program will ultimately have to change a little bit, but I don't know. Again, I don't want to be a martyr, but I'm proud of seeing like 6, 6, 6, 6, 7, 7, 7, 7, 8, 7, 7, 7, 8, 8, you know, and I just think that that more appropriately represents the rate of muscle growth. And if I were to jump ship, I do think there's a limit. There's a point at which I wouldn't be okay with it. But I do think I'm like, that more appropriately looks like what's happening on the inside, you know? Yeah.
I don't want to be. No, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I think this whole conversation has been pretty solid and enlightening. Like, it should be called Deep Muscle Building Thoughts from Brian and Jordan or something like that. But no, I think it's been productive. I think people will find value in all this.
Cool, man. All right. I'm not even gonna ask you to tell people, go sign up for Brian's program. Go, I don't know. Where go
Yeah,
catch
don't
one.
do Jordan's program, guys. Come on. You know better than to do Jordan's
Yes, yes,
program.
yes, yes,
We do strength cycles. We have one starting May
Jordan keeps
12th.
everything the
Leave
same
his program.
24/7.
Come do deadlifts and barbell back squats for singles. Don't you want to do that?
All right, man. Yeah, it's good catching up. And we didn't talk enough about biking and cardio stuff, but for another time.
For sure.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram, @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.